Hello. Hal here. I used to say stuff while Dino was streaming on Twitch. I agreed to help introduce this podcast series. This series is called The Moths of Programming. The series is about questionable ideas in programming that propagate through the software engineering industry due to virality, instead of reality. This is Chapter 2. Go to's, are evil.
Everybody knows that go-tos are evil. It seems hardly worth talking about anymore, but maybe on a lazy Sunday afternoon when people are really bored, they decide to drag this one out of the cupboard. Just why are go-tos evil? It's the kind of thing that is there to scare programmers everywhere. It's like the story of the bogeyman, or the other one, Sandman, or whatever, the Pied Piper. I don't know, characters from mythology that are there to sort of grab you and take you away and do nasty things to you if you dare make a transgression. And one of those with programming is go-tos. Just the mere thought of using a go-to sends a pang of guilt through any programmer these days, myself included. But just where does this come from? And, you know, is it overstated? Is it really understood and appreciated as to, you know, the logic behind the idea? Of course, the spaghetti programming sort of will rear its head. It always does on the topic. But what is spaghetti programming? And is spaghetti only something that exists within the domain of unstructured programming using go-tos? Well, I think one of the things that we have to think about again, just in the same way as was the case with global variables are bad, go-tos are evil because somebody said that they were. And this has propagated itself throughout the thinking in computer science ever since. And I'm going to argue that although there is a truth, obviously, there is a reason why this idea sort of surfaced its head. The obsession with it, the grabbing hold of this idea and using it as a kind of something to hold on to so that you feel as though you've got a grasp of programming, has actually caused some damage. And the question is a lot more. There's a lot more to it than first meets the eye. So one of the things that we need to do is go back in time again. And this time, I'm not going to go back as far as basic. I'm going to go further. We're going to go back to the time of assembly programming. So this might be a topic of a future chapter. In itself, the moths that surround the concepts of assembler programming. But without a doubt, go-tos are evil is a moth. And let's thoroughly explore this one. So to go back to assembler programming, what one needs to understand is that the computer itself, the microprocessors themselves, have no idea that go-tos are evil. If you actually were to insist that go-tos are evil, then what you would have to do is insist that microprocessors are evil, that CPUs are evil, that computers are evil, and you might have a point. But basically, in the computer itself, go-tos are fundamental to the architecture of a computer. So right there, the statement go-tos are evil is in fact nonsense. One needs to sort of perhaps be a little more accurate with wording and say the use of go-tos in a higher level programming language than assembler is generally to be frowned upon. And I might accept that statement. But the statement, go-tos are evil, is a gross oversimplification. So the way that a microprocessor works is essentially, it uses an architecture that essentially was developed by von Neumann, or Neumann, but is also very well connected with Alan Turing's vision of, or let's say abstraction of a computer, which is the Turing machine. And the Turing machine has a go-to. Basically, given any list of instructions that you want a computer to execute, the idea is that you can branch at a certain point and say, now I wish to go to, you know, instruction 7. I mean, it's rather like if you have instructions for carrying out a task, say listed on a website for, I don't know, asking Windows to please stop popping up this notification every 3 seconds or something. And you'll go there and you'll say, these are the steps to get rid of this thing, you know. Step 1, step 2. And you might have an if statement at a certain point where it goes, if you are in Windows, 10, go to step 7. I don't know, right? So you've got this go-to. I mean, it's kind of interesting that there you have a practical example from, like, real life. And your go-to is there, right? Because it kind of works. Could you imagine if they did those with, like, curly braces instead? So, anyway, under the hood, your microprocessor, your computer, is using this all the time, and it's basically branching execution to follow the next set of instructions from somewhere else. So this is what the go-to basically is. So when programmers were, back in those days, when they had to program in assembler, they had to use go-tos. And so it wasn't a case that go-tos were evil. It was like go-tos were necessary. Things developed from assembler to, higher-level programming languages, which have been a ton. And so early programming languages will have copied the kind of way that a CPU works so that they would replicate the assembler instructions in a higher form. And so you'll see that with things like addition, which the CPU can do in assembler, or subtraction and indexing and so on, and then also the go-to. So, and the principle of the go-to is that you say which, you know, label you want to go to, and then you put a label in and it goes to that label, you know, that's the idea. That's all well and good, but the problem is that when you program in that way, it requires a certain amount of discipline on the part of the programmer to ensure that you don't make a mess. I mean, not making a mess of your program as you're programming is kind of the main point of being a programmer. But one of the things that kind of happened is that there was slowly a shift from, you know, relying on the idea that programmers, software engineers, actually could be disciplined to the idea that we had to impose discipline upon them. And so there was a search for different ways of designing languages, hopefully with the idea that mistakes, that is bugs and so on, would be less likely to happen. So this is obviously a very reasonable thing to try and do. So when you look at that, one of the earliest things that comes to mind when you look at the work of an assembler programmer is that very quickly the code can become spaghetti-like. And that's because all this jumping around could mean that you jump forward and then jump back and then jump to the left and whatever, create something that when you look at it, you can't understand what it is doing. So in an effort to try and address this issue, the idea of putting structure on the go-tos in some way was introduced. This was also a problem with languages such as BASIC. Although, interestingly, even early versions of BASIC had a for loop. So we will look at the for loop, but let's just say that it should be clear, before I do that, it should be clear that what the intention was, and it was a very good intention. And at some point, somebody, I don't remember who it was, said, go-tos are evil. Instead of using go-tos, we should use these, you know, take the structured approach and use other things, such as, and what are they? Say, for loops. You put a loop in. How would you do a loop on the CPU directly in assembler? Is you would construct a loop by jumping backwards. So, okay, fair enough. But we all think of that, but there is something a little subtler going on as well. Just the if statement. When you look at an if statement in C or C sharp, the if statement is wrapping a go-to. I mean, in a sense, it's an abstraction of a go-to, because if the statement is true, then you execute the piece of code that immediately follows. And if the if statement is false, you jump around it. When programming in assembler, that's a very common thing to do. You do a check and say if, and you have to think in the the reverse, right? So if the statement is true, jump, which means that you only execute the code if the statement is not true or if the thing you're checking is not true. And so in that way, an if statement is basically a conditional branch around a block of code. So even the if statement is a wrapper, if you will, or an abstraction of go-tos. With the for loop, you actually are creating two jumps. So the first is a conditional jump if the for loop, if the loop is to end. And the second one is the jump backwards. So when you do, say, in C, for, and then you have three statements separated by two semicolons. The first one is executed to initialize. The middle one is the test to see if you should exit the loop. And the third one is what you should do every time you go around again, basically it. So that's usually the increment. So you end up with, you know, 4i equals 0, I less than 3, I plus plus. So increment I until I arrives at 3, and then you jump out. And this matches, or this goes into assembler in a really simple way. But it's very important to understand that you've created two go-tos. With the if statement, you've created one go-to. If you do a while statement, it's the same kind of idea. Although if you think about it, if you do it that way, you could do the do while. Now, lots of times people don't think about the do while. The do while is always guaranteed to execute at least once. But you see, the interesting thing with that is that while do requires two go-tos, right? Because you've got a check at the beginning to jump out of the loop, but then you have a jump back when you do the, you know, when you go round again. Do while only needs one. But you see, so here's my point. You say, well, why does this matter? So it might matter because you might care about, you know, wasted CPU cycles. That used to be really important. It's less important these days because software bloat and poor performance has become acceptable. But it's nobody thinks about it. Nobody thinks about the go-tos that are under the code. Go-tos are not evil. They're there all the time. When you look at the for loop or any loop, you've also got other go-tos. So continue. When you say continue, it's really go to the loop again. When you say break, it means exit the loop. That's a go-to. So the point I'm making here is that, you know, in the end, it's just a dressing over a go-to. Well, the point is that you can make a complete mess of your code by putting in a lot of continues and a lot of breaks and a lot of if statements. It's kind of a different kind of spaghetti. But you can still create spaghetti. In fact, let's just see how well it's worked out in helping us create, you know, code that doesn't go wrong. Well, it doesn't seem to have really helped that much. And the reason is because more important than trying to constrain what programmers do by imposing a discipline upon them is that you want programmers to be disciplined, you know, self-disciplined. And every time we create these kind of ideas and make people afraid of certain language features or force them into a certain way of thinking, we actually diminish the capacity of the programmer to be, you know, self-disciplined. And so the end result is it doesn't help. That's just a way of looking at it. You gain on one hand and you lose on the other. And so which is the thing that is more important? To have rules which guide the way we think and develop software. You know, a rule book. Or that we have the self-discipline to write good code, but also the ability to explore and invent and see clearly what is going on. So the idea that go-tos are bad is kind of interesting, because it's got to the point where everybody just... If you really think go-tos are bad, what happens is that you stop looking at your code from the point of view of the CPU. You stop seeing the go-tos that are there. Now, because I started programming in assembler and BASIC and all of that, I do see them all the time, and I think it helps. But there were things that you could do in assembler, and this is to give another context to the idea of how it became said that go-tos were bad. That in assembler, you could do horrific things. If you think that go-tos are evil, you should see what you could do in assembler. These are things that modern programmers might not ever even think about. But for example, you're all used, everybody's used to the idea of a function. And a function has an entry point, and only one entry point. But when you start working in assembler, that's not a given rule. You can create a subroutine, which is what we normally call them in assembler rather than a function, that has multiple entry points. But what? You go, yeah, you can choose to jump into this function here or here. You can skip a bit. You could have, you know, most of the function is the same, but we create three variants by having three entry points. It's a completely different way of thinking. Now, it's an important way of thinking. And it's perfectly valid way of programming. The point is that if you haven't had the experience of doing that in assembler, you won't even consider it to solve as a possibility of solving complex problems in a higher level language. I mean, but it gets worse. A subroutine is basically a go-to. Oh, I forgot to mention that. I mean, every time you call a function, it's a go-to. I mean, it's like jump to this function. But it's a special case because it remembers where it jumped from, and then you could say return. And so return means return back to just after whatever it was that called you, right? But it is, in fact, a go-to. In fact, technically, it's two go-tos. It's to go-to there, and then there's a go-to back, right? Or jump. So, yeah. Well, the problem in assembler, or the thing in assembler, is that you can jump from one function to another in the middle. The middle? Certainly the middle. Yeah. Sorry, that's a little reference to Car from the Jungle Book. But anyway, the point is that you could actually have, in the middle of a function, you jump to another function. These kinds of shenanigans, which would make, you know, many people, especially people on Stack Overflow, make their hair stand on end, you know, was stuff that you used to do to save memory and CPU cycles where you had a really constrained system. So it was a form of optimization. It's how you can create really compact code by doing tricks like that. But obviously, these kinds of tricks do not make for readable code. It's difficult and makes code difficult to maintain. So generally, you would do them at the end as an optimization pass, or when you found that you just simply couldn't fit it in memory anymore. But again, the fact that is that by banishing go-to from the thought processes of programmers, any that never did assembler programming will not be aware of these tricks at all. And so this is unable to inform their creative problem solving that they use in order to solve, you know, more modern problems. There's a whole, you know, a set of tools which are simply not available to modern programmers, and they dare not even look at them, for it has been declared that go-tos are evil. So let's look at this a little bit more and just see just how evil they are in reality. Well, the first thing is that the context, the idea that go-tos are evil is, well, let's rephrase it. Go-tos are dangerous, might be a better way of putting it. And certainly when you look at assembler programming, that is definitely the case, that you can misuse them. And this can cause a whole heap of trouble. But by the time we get to languages such as C, structured languages, a lot of the dangers of go-tos are removed. For example, it is not possible to jump to a function. You call a function. In assembler, you could be in a subroutine and literally jump to another subroutine so that when that subroutine says return, it returns to the caller of the one that just jumped there. I don't know if that makes sense, but basically what it means is that you can jump between functions and do it in a way that makes sense in assembler, even if, you know, it might be a bit tricky. You absolutely can't do that in C, because the go-to instruction is already severely restricted compared to an assembler. So this is important to understand, because it's not possible to jump from inside one function to another function. So we can see that as the language has evolved, certain things that were viewed as being, you know, perhaps a little too tricky were made prohibited by the language. You know, unless you do things like inline assembler and other tricks like that, you the normal standard language, you can't do it. So what that actually means is that a lot of the spaghetti that you could get from like programming in BASIC or programming in assembler just simply do not apply. And there we have the moth. The origin of go-tos are evil actually comes from assembler programming and non-structured languages. But the moment that you have the constraints of structured languages, go-tos are very much tamer, and there's very much less damage that you could do with them. But the moth flutters around in programmers' heads as a scary thing, way out of proportion to the actual danger of it. And the result is that this closes off different ways of thinking about software development. And so what I'm going to do is just touch on what happened to this, with this whole thing, is the creation of it was a terrible travesty. It's utter travesty of and a lost opportunity that occurred. And it's the subject of coroutines. So the funny thing is about coroutines is that they came to sort of greater attention because of Unity. Unity uses the enumeration or enumerable thing that goes on in C#, where basically it's possible to have a function that remembers its state and you can sort of give it another call. So basically, it's the way that coroutines work in C# is that you can create a function and then delay its execution and then execute it a bit at a time. And so later. So it actually is, in effect, creating a little tiny virtual machine or subcompiler. I don't know what you want to call it. I mean, it's a little difficult to explain, but let me see if I can. You can create a function that the first time, that when you create it, doesn't execute, and then you call something on it called move next, right? And what it does is it executes it until it yields, and maybe it yields a value, like 1. So we create one of these, and it does yield return 1, yield return 2, yield return 3. When you create it, does nothing. When you do a move next on it, it will return 1. When you do a move next on it the second time, it returns 2. When you do a move next the third time, it returns 3. So what you've got is a kind of thing where the execution of code within this is done sort of in steps, right? I'll do a bit of execution of this, and then I'll leave it alone until I come back and I execute the next one. So the result of it is that it means that you can create a thing like what Unity calls coroutines, which allows you to create something that kind of runs without, and like, for example, a pause. You could say, okay, this thing is going to pause for a second, but it doesn't pause the whole program. It doesn't lock up your whole editor. This little thing is pausing, and it just, every time you call move next, it doesn't do anything until eventually it finishes its pause, and then it... All right, okay. So it's a difficult thing to explain in a podcast, but maybe you're familiar with it. So with these coroutines, what's I find quite funny is that they're not coroutines. See, they're called coroutines, but they aren't. Because the coroutine is something that came from a guy called Conway in 1964. And he made a paper, and it was about coroutines. He called them coroutines. But the problem that he was solving was one of parsing a text file, which is an interesting problem. And he showed in his paper how, when parsing, you can basically have every character that comes in as like a what we would consider a tick, or the main loop in Unity. Each character comes in, and then the state of the parser, the thing that's going to interpret this text, can change depending on the characters coming in. And is able to, you know, parse the file and generate a state machine in order to parse it, in order to interpret it, without needing to use a switch statement, which is the way that normally it would work. You might have a switch statement and a variable that says we're in this state or this state or this state. And the switch statements, by the way, which I didn't mention, are basically a wrapper, an abstraction of go-tos. So what was this coroutine? It was a very simple, very elegant idea. And that is that when you call the function, it actually has multiple entry points. And so at a certain point, it could say, next time you call me here. Next time you call me here. So if I go back to this, the thing about, you know, instructions on the internet of how to purge your windows of some kind of dialogue that keeps popping up, or, you know, you want to do something really, really technical, like, you know, have a dark theme, you know. There are these instructions that you will follow. And the coroutine, the original coroutine, was something like, yeah, at step two it says, so you need to reboot your computer. And when you come back to these instructions, continue from three. Continue for the next one, continue from three. So you reboot your computer, you go to the website, and what are you doing? You're in effect entering a function sort of midway through. That is what the original coroutine was. It's subtly different from what Unity calls a coroutine, but it is different, although it achieves a similar end result. But you see, the thing about this is that essentially the coroutine is something called, or uses something called, a computed go-to, something that is trivial in assembler. A computed go-to is where the address that the processor should jump to is the result of a calculation instead of being defined at compile time or assembler time. And so you could implement Conway's coroutines by simply saying, next time when this function is entered, we should jump to this point. And that point that it should jump to moves down the function over time, so that you are able to do everything that you could do with, say, that's the same as what you could do with Unity's coroutines. Computed go-to. Fortran had a computed go-to. The C programming language did not have a computed go-to. If it did, the world would be very different now. The GNU C compiler does allow for a computed go-to, but that is pretty useless if you want to write code that runs on anything other than GNU C. So what we were left with was this thing that you couldn't implement coroutines. You couldn't implement coroutines in C. And this is a huge travesty and a huge mistake. And why? Because go-tos were considered evil and they were shunned. And so, because of this, because somebody put their foot down and said, we shall not have go-to. You see, because of that, coroutines that were so powerful and special was not able to take, to influence the thinking of programmers or the development of languages, such that if you want to actually implement coroutines in C and C++, it's something I've devoted quite a lot of effort to exploring. The reason I like using C Sharp is because C Sharp, although it doesn't support coroutines, does support, I suppose that you call them continuations, or the ability that you can suspend the execution of a function and continue it later. And you are able to recreate something that's almost exactly the same, although it is different. But it's the main point about it being different is that it's slightly more removed from needing to use a go-to. But otherwise, So you might go, well, what the hell are you going on about? Does it really matter? We have coroutines now. Well, yeah, we do. We have them in C Sharp. We might have them in C++. I think that is coming at last. But I have a kind of rule with C++ not to embrace anything in C++ until it's been around for 20 years. Because otherwise you could write code that you can't run on a particular platform, and then you have to rewrite everything. But I'll tell you this. When I wrote Goal, I started writing Goal around 1991, 92. And that was writing in 68,000 assembly. And I was really interested in this problem of how to do concurrent programming, as is to, do like multitasking or threads, software threads, right? And I came up with an idea, and it was a macro. And what this macro did, it was called From Now On. And what it did was it took the address of the next instruction after the From Now On and stored it in a variable. When I jumped into the coroutine, there was the equivalent of a switch. So it would be another macro, which is a bit like a switch, in essence. And so that would actually jump to the current address that was stored in this variable. So what you would get is you could execute a piece of code and then say, from now on, continue here. And this is actually Conway's coroutines, though I didn't know it. I came up with it sort of independently. The internet hadn't been really, well, it had been invented, but it wasn't available at that time to the general public. I had no way of really accessing the research, but I came up with this by myself. And it was only many 10, 20 years later that I found out that, in fact, that it had been done before, and it was by Conway in this paper. And I was left saying, why this most beautiful idea doesn't exist, that solves so many problems and is so powerful, as is witnessed by the fact that people use coroutines pretty frequently in Unity now. And what was the coroutine? It's a form of go-to. It's really quite sad. So, what can I say? Go-tos are evil. Not really. They underlie everything that goes on in programming. The origin had more to do with the kind of unstructured programming that happened in unstructured programming languages. And this kind of desire to sort of just treat them as something not even to think about has closed the minds of software developers. Resulted in quite a severe and sad loss of opportunity.
I love it.
Thank you for listening. Dino and I both hope that you enjoyed this podcast. Watch out for the next chapter in this series. The tune at the start is Man with a Mission, and we end with Despot Measures, both written and performed by Dino.
Like kickoff. I love it.
Where did he go? We like it so. We like it so.
If I don't love it, I won't play.
Which way shall we play? Only one way to play.
I am the holder and the keeper of the one true version. We shall all play.
More than all of you.